While Israel certainly receives a good share of the bombs and missiles it uses in Gaza from the U.S., some commentators have pointed out that Washington is also secretly providing very advanced intelligence and artificial intelligence to target people in Gaza. James Bamford is the author of Spyfall, The Puzzle Palace, and Body of Secrets, and he recently wrote the piece, How U.S. Intelligence and an American Company Feed Israel's Killing Machine in Gaza, for The Nation magazine. He spoke with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg.
What is feeding the Israeli killing machine in terms of artificial intelligence? How's that working? Do they have their own programs to do that, or are they getting help from outside, from some companies like in the U.S.?
Both. They develop their own systems, and they get help from the U.S. One of the companies is Palantir. It's a company in Denver, and they make pretty much data mining software. A lot of it is used for targeting. They produce the most targeting software for the war in Ukraine, for the Ukrainian government. So they're very experienced in doing that. And then more recently, they've been selling their systems to the Israeli government. And what they do is they give the Israeli government the opportunity to use AI, artificial intelligence, in order to assist their targeting. So where previously targets would be picked out and debated and analyzed and then executed by humans, at this point it's done almost instantaneously, within seconds a lot of times, by machines that have a number of failure rates. I think some of the systems that they use for targeting have up to 10% failure rate, which means 10% of the people who are killed aren't targets. Right. So there's a lot of that. Then the Israelis have their own system. One of them is called Lavender, which is used to target a lot of innocent civilians. And that's how you have so many innocent civilian deaths over there.
Is part of the argument for AI, for these type of targeting systems, is part of the argument that it makes the targeting more precise? Is that what they try to argue?
It makes the target more efficient. And in other words, if instead of going through a lot of data, that's the other issue here, is data. In order to have a targeting system, you need a great deal of data, which means intelligence. Where is this person? Who is this person? What is his habits? All those kind of things. So where does he live? And they get a lot of that information from the U.S., from the National Security Agency, the NSA. So the NSA collects a great deal of intelligence, and we've had a long-term intelligence sharing agreement with the Israeli government. So the NSA supplies a lot of the data that goes into the AI machines, the targeting machines. So the AI machines take this data. Where does the person live? How long have they lived there? How many members of his family? Where is he normally on a particular day? What are his connections, if any, to Hamas? Who are his friends? Who are his contacts? So it takes all that intelligence, and instead of some analyst like me or whatever human being sitting down and trying to figure this out, is this person valid? Is this person not valid? Do you think this person would be there right now? It's all done in a matter of seconds because the AI does the analysis.
Is this the kind of system the U.S. uses when it conducts its drone attacks in various countries?
Yeah, the U.S. uses a similar system. I'm not as familiar with what systems the U.S. uses for drones, but basically, it's the same kind of system, and Palantir sells their equipment to the U.S. as well as to foreign governments. So I would assume it would be somewhat similar to that. Although you can never know. It depends on how much human input an intelligence agency or a country or a government inputs into that AI. It could be 90% AI, 80% AI, 95% AI. So you don't know unless you have the information how much of an input the human being is on this. there's better input, human input, in the U.S. system than there has been, obviously, in the Israeli system, since they kill a great number of people. But part of that also is because of their own system, like one called Lavender, which notifies the targeteer, or the person manning the targets, when that person is home, for example. And then they destroy the home. They bomb the home or something.
So it could be the family as well as the target, right?
That's right. So they don't really care. They just want to get the target. They know the target's home. It's easier to get him when he's sitting down in his chair at home than traveling in a car someplace. So then the program says, okay, he's home. And then immediately they blow up the house, and you're killing numerous civilians, spouse, the children, any kind of relatives, grandparents, aunts, uncles, whoever happens to be in the house. And these days, there's a lot of large family living in a single house because a lot of the houses have been destroyed. So that's what's adding to the enormous numbers of casualty rates, over 33,000, at least that we know of. I mean, how many are buried under the rubble?
These companies that you referred to, are they also producing robots that will go to war in place of soldiers?
Well, I don't know about Palantir. I'm only focused on their targeting software at this point, but there are numerous companies in the U.S. that are developing autonomous systems, even for jet aircraft. So there's that's sort of the next wave, is to create this sort of autonomous warfare where the soldiers and the warriors are sitting at some console in front of a computer screen, and it's these machines that are actually doing the work, the bombing, the shooting, the killing, and so forth. So we're moving in that direction, and you can see how both in the Ukraine and also in Gaza, how it's being put into effect.
What is Unit 8200? Could you talk about that?
Unit 8200 is the Israeli equivalent of the National Security Agency, NSA. They both have the same task, which is to, using very, very sophisticated technology, to eavesdrop on communications and to store and analyze those communications. The NSA supplies a great deal of the technical information to Israel, and Unit 8200 makes use of that while they're conducting this war in Gaza. So the two work together very closely, and both of them are extremely sophisticated when it comes to eavesdropping, targeting, and anything to do with electronic surveillance.
So any opposition that you know of within the Israeli or American government to this type of warfare?
Well, it's interesting. I interviewed Edward Snowden when he first got to Moscow after he fled the U.S. with a great deal of material he had taken, you know, hundreds of thousands of documents on digital flash drives that he took from the NSA. He went to Hong Kong, and then he ended up in Moscow, and I interviewed him. I was one of the first people to interview him in Moscow. I spent about 3 days with him there. And one of the things he told me was that one of the biggest problems that he saw, or the things that offended him the most, was the fact that the U.S. was eavesdropping on Palestinians in the U.S. Palestinian citizens, Palestinian relatives, and so forth. And they were communicating to their relatives and friends back in the occupied territories. So the NSA was sending Israel this unredacted material on American citizens who happen to be Palestinian. And then the Israelis would make use of it, trying to blackmail them, bribe them, extort from them, and turn them into agents. So Snowden told me about that. And then about a year later, it was still going on. It's probably still going on now. But about a year later, there were about over 40 members of the Israeli military who were working at Unit 8200. And they became so upset at the outrageous use of that information to target and eavesdrop and extort Palestinians that they actually walked out and held press conferences. And it was a big scandal for quite a while. So, I mean, even the Israeli military people who were doing this were so offended by the outrageousness of the activity. And again, the U.S. had been the major collaborator with Unit 8200 on these activities.
So Congress just approved once again the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. So would that cover what you're talking about, the idea that American citizens can be spied on when they talk to people in other countries?
Yes, the way it works is the NSA collects enormous amounts of information. If they want to eavesdrop on me or American citizen, they have to get a warrant from a judge to do that and show probable cause, show why I should be eavesdropped on. However, if I make a phone call to somebody overseas who's not an American citizen, they can eavesdrop. Well, they can, first of all, collect that information without a warrant because I'm speaking to somebody outside the country who's not an American citizen. And their justification is that they're attempting to collect intelligence. So theoretically, they're doing it because they're trying to collect intelligence on the person overseas. And then once that's all collected, it goes to this huge storage facility. It's a data storage facility NSA has in Utah. It's a mammoth facility. It's five times the size of the U.S. Capitol. And it can hold up to zettabytes and yottabytes, which are the two largest numbers ever created for digital storage. So it takes all that, puts it into the storage capability out in Bluffdale, Utah, and then it can stay there forever. There's no time on it.
Do you think this use of AI by the Israelis is really going to contribute to, as the Palestinians would put it, the second Nakba? Or is that what this already is, pretty much, another Nakba?
Well, obviously, it's a new Nakba. It's the first Nakba was in 1948 when the Israelis forced out, either at gunpoint or through terror, the Palestinians who were living, many of them, for generations in Palestine. At the time, it was called Palestine. And then they forced them out into refugee camps and to the West Bank and Gaza and so forth, and took over their property or their land. So, yeah, that's what this appears to be, is a sort of second Nakba, where the Israelis are attempting to either kill or starve to death or force out of Gaza the remaining descendants of the original Nakba. And many of them are discussing just taking it over again. In other words, reoccupying it. So that's why they call this a second Nakba, and aiding them. Obviously, they didn't have computers or AI back in 1948, but today they have computers and targeting AI to help them.
And you would say this started in 2021? When the Israelis first used AI in Gaza?
Well, the Israelis say that themselves. I mean, that was a quote I used in my article. It came from a senior Israeli military official, and that's what he said. Our first, or the our war against Gaza in 2021 was our first AI war. So, yeah, that's what they said. And now it's been perfected largely.
And anything else you'd like to add to what you said? It's not particularly about AI, but any speculation about how this thing might end, this latest war, this latest Israeli assault?
Well, all this discussion we're having over AI and targeting, you also have to consider then, if it's so accurate and it's so perfected, how do they explain that they blew up in perfect fashion the aid trucks a few weeks ago, where they put missiles directly in the roof of the aid trucks, the roofs that actually had the aid logos on the top. They put the missiles exactly there. So when they come out and they say this is just an accident, how do they explain accidents on the one hand? On the other hand, they're saying how accurate their and sophisticated their systems are. So those are really issues that the U.S. should be bringing to the forefront, since we're paying for this war, basically. We're supplying the weapons, and we're supplying the cover, and we're supplying everything for this war. So in terms of how it ends, it's only going to end, I think, the same way the Vietnam War ended, by having enough people protesting and enough demonstrations and enough activism to force the Biden administration to put the brakes on this. Without U.S. money, without U.S. weapons, and without U.S. support, there is no Gaza war. The Israelis would be left to their own devices, and I think they would find a way to stop it.
So the pressure the Biden administration has put on so far, threatening to or maybe imposing sanctions on West Bank settlers, or
that's just
the Israelis do. What's that?
Those are just, what do you call it?
Political theater?
Yeah, political theater, frosting on the cake. They're not, it's not really, it's tokenism is what it is. Let's throw some little tokens out to keep the protesters happy. It's meaningless, and they should have done that years ago. I mean, this just didn't start happening in the West Bank. It's been going on for decades. So this is
but
just
now there's more attention. You know, it's on YouTube. It's being televised. It's on social media. So it's harder for them to ignore it, I think.
Well, sure it is, and it's getting worse and worse, and there is no end game here at all. And the U.S., Biden administration has been giving the Israelis whatever they want. Biden got more money from AIPAC and the pro-Israeli lobbies in the Senate when he was there than anybody else, any other senator, I think, in history. So, you know, he comes out and says, I'm a Zionist and so forth. So he's locked into this. This is his thing. You need to get rid of presidents that think only of war and have no concept of what the countries are doing with the weapons that we give them. And so, you know, how's it going to end? Who knows at this point? You know, the Vietnam War went on for, what, over a decade and 15 years or so, and the war in the Ukraine is going on now in its second year. So, you know, once you start these, it's very hard to stop them. And in Israel, there is no motivation to really stop. There's a number of people that don't like Netanyahu, but that doesn't translate into necessarily not liking the war. A lot of them, I think there's a majority support for the war in, I don't think, I know there's a, from everything I've read, there's a majority support for the war, not necessarily for Netanyahu, but for the war. So if you've got a country that is still wanting to keep the war going and we're continuing to send the weapons to keep it going, then, you know, the question is, how do you stop that?
There's been some pressure on Netanyahu to get the hostages released, but that doesn't seem to be a priority.
Well, his priority is to win the war, and to win the war means completely flattening Gaza, forcing every last Gazan into Egypt or killing them, one or the other. And that's his definition of winning the war. And so, I mean, if nobody is alive, then obviously you've killed all the members of Hamas. So it's this war of ultimate destruction, human destruction, physical destruction, cultural destruction that he's waging. And there's nobody with a stop sign except for students and protesters and, you know, a few people in Congress.
That's author and journalist James Bamford. He spoke with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. when the death toll in Gaza was a little lower than it is at this point. This interview was released on June 5th, 2024.